welcome to Dr. Fred Bell's Health, Science, and Energy Show, heard worldwide on bbsradio.com and all over on the airwaves at 1340 Tan Talk, Florida. Welcome to my Floridians that listen to me every night, and we have a great guest tonight. His name is Majid Ali. He's got very famous clients. He's a, you know, I wouldn't know how to start to describe this guy, but let's just say he knows about herbs. He takes up to 59 of them a day. And as we know, we spoke to about many times about herbs being vibration that work on certain parts in the DNA that space the chromosomes to really make the herb trip work. And this is all done through nature because nature corrects the things that we humans do stupidly. And in its corrections, it grows plants to put into our consciousness. And I want to, at this point, bring on Majid Ali. How are you doing, guy?
I'm doing great. How about you?
Good, man. You got great credentials.
Oh, thanks. Yeah, it's all that hard work.
Yeah, it's hard work. It's fun stuff. It's just
I love it. Yeah.
So tell us, could you tell my clientele, my listeners out there, a little bit about your background, where you're coming from, where you're from, and blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, sure. I'm out here in Southern California. I'm in Santa Monica.
Yeah.
And I've been doing this for 18 years, and it was kind of an interesting journey. I had been
Now, what is this? Explain what this is.
I do Chinese medicine. I use herbs and acupuncture, and I use a unique testing system that's based on, it's loosely based on kinesiology.
Right.
But what we do is we take all the acupuncture points and we use them as diagnostic points.
So exactly, I got it.
We've associated them to particular points to specific organs.
Right.
And then we do a type of O-ring test where we stress these points out, looking for a weak or strong response with either the patient's fingers or my own as a surrogate. And we found through...
How do you administer that test to the body?
Well, what we'll do is we'll, to calibrate how well the test is, we'll have the patient take their middle finger and thumb and hold the tips together, and then as we
pull them apart.
Yeah, we want them to match our strength.
So right, exactly. Got it.
Match. And then what we do is we stress out those particular points. We have a hand combination we use for yin and yang, so we check for homeostasis.
Right.
And then from meditation mudras, we found that different finger combinations mathematically match the energies of viruses, bacteria, toxins, parasites.
That's brilliant. Have you got a book coming out on this?
Well, I'm working on it. I'm actually working on it. This is based on kind of a collaborative research between the guy I learned this testing system from out here in Reseda named Matt Van Den Schoten, and he had taken some elements of the Omura O-ring test.
Right.
And tied that into elements of this of a Vega testing system that they use homeopathically.
Right, I understand because I'm a homeopath. Go ahead.
Oh, perfect. Okay, so you know that. So what we did was we found that there was a couple of glitches that sometimes reading the information through another conduit other than the patient itself that sometimes we got some false information, and so we were finding that if we could read the basically the ultraviolet infrared off the patient itself.
Right.
Themselves, then it made it easier for us to determine what was wrong. And then once we find something that's out of balance, we try and find the corresponding herb that matches that frequency. And so each person gets their own individualized formula.
So that's brilliant because you know herbs and frequencies probably by name, right?
Yeah.
Oh, that's cool. We can have a great chat here later. Go ahead.
So we end up relating these back to... So then we broke them down to, so now we have an antiviral categories, antibacterial.
Right.
We have it based on, through basically using the color spectrum from red through scarlet. And so it's a matter of trying to match that up. And so consequently, we don't have to pull anything off the shelf that's pre-made.
Right, and, I understand.
Yeah, and I have a little over 300 herbs in my pharmacy at the office. So it gives me, you know, basically 9,000 combinations I can pull together to
Yeah, and I got to tell you something. You know, a guy like you, people don't understand the complexity of the herbs in this world.
No, they don't. They really don't.
And my hat's off to you because it's so commendable, you know, from an American point of view. It's probably boring to do this job, but you're doing it because you believe in it and you're doing it out of love. And if guys weren't, you're like a master with this, aren't you?
Well, you know, I'm learning every day. You know.
Yeah. Well, that's what masters always tell me. You know.
You know, it's never a mastery. It really is.
Yeah.
Because there are days a patient comes in and they'll tell me their symptoms, and I'm you know just dead sure I know what's wrong with them, and then I start testing them, and it's completely opposite of what I was thinking. So.
I know. Doesn't it work that way?
Yeah.
Murphy's Law in Ayurvedic medicine.
You know, and I'll start pulling out herbs I think are definitely going to work, and I just don't get a reading, so I'll actually kind of scan my herb test kit until I find the right blend. And, you know, it's really been exciting. It's been one of those things I've been doing in close to 19 years now.
Yeah, that's amazing. And it's just getting better, isn't it?
Yeah, it really is. I mean, you know, from when I first started and, you know, insurance companies wouldn't even, or doctors wouldn't even talk to me, and now I have the gastro department at UCLA refers to me. I have the pediatric group that refers to me. And you know, it's really been a blessing in the sense that more and more people are understanding that, that there really is kind of a gray area in health. You know, if you were to break it down into, you know, white as health and black as poor health, you know, Western medicine can really only find things when you're in that charcoal gray to black. By that time, you're too late.
Right.
But when you have these myriad of symptoms, you're really kind of vacillating and oscillating in this gray category. And that's really where I think homeopathy, herbs, acupuncture, chiropractic, massage, meditation, all those things really operate at in that frequency of trying to manipulate that gray so the person moves back into the lighter spectrum of gray so they have health.
Yeah, exactly. It's light or dark, you know. And
right.
When you're in the human body, light works better.
Sure. Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, and I think when you were talking about, you know, even the energetics of food, I mean, people forget that when you're eating dead food, it's dead energy.
Yeah. You know, Hitler was a vegetarian. That's what I would tell people.
Yeah, I mean, I was vegan for a long time. I now eat kind of a wider blend of things, but I was macrobiotic for a long time. And
can I ask you a question? When you were macrobiotic, did you feel a little bit? How was your yin energy behaving versus your yang? Did you find yourself getting yinned out, or could you balance it at that level?
You know, I worked out a lot. I still do.
Okay, that kept you grounded.
That kept me grounded, but I have to say, I was a little. I got injured a little more than.
Yeah, the calcium wasn't working as good as it normally would.
So
the
I had to
change it a little bit.
Yeah, so that's when I had to start adding back in it fish.
Yeah, I understand that. Yeah.
Yeah. And,
totally cool.
Yeah,
you know what? I'm probably getting out of the range of my audience here, but you're just a blast to talk to. I'm having a great time with you because, you know, you're so rare.
Oh, well,
go ahead.
Sorry to interrupt. Thank you.
Yeah.
You're rare. No, it's great. I mean, it's fun talking to someone like yourself who gets it because, although I believe you have a background in aerospace as well.
Yeah, I was a rocket scientist and did all that kind of stuff and got a lot of awards for that. And then, but here's what switched me over. It was about, when was it, 1966. And we had to work 12 hours a day,
mm-hmm.
7 days a week, you know, for 2 years straight. We had no weekends, nothing off, 12 and 12. And that's what you did. You want a vacation, switch shifts.
Right.
I smoked two packs of either of Camels or Pall Mills or Lucky Strikes to keep in my body.
Right.
When I left that, 2 years later and went out, I said, there's another path, this government, because I was a government kid at a very young age, very, very famous kind of guy, but
mm-hmm.
that doesn't matter here. So anyway, I was a sick person, you know, so that's how I got into holistic health.
Right.
And I quit smoking when I walked out the door. Didn't have a problem with that.
Yeah.
To breathe the air again. But a lot of people get that in smaller tastes than I did.
Right.
You know what I mean? They're mm-hmm. getting it, our society is almost getting like that because people live out of their means. And they don't, you know, they don't see the spiritual path, and they're being actually deadened by the politics and the BS because they don't tune into what's going on politically.
Yeah, I mean, I think they get caught up in the toys. I was telling one of my patients.
Oh, yes, they do that for sure.
You know, it's like as long as you have your BlackBerry, you know, as long as you're a pseudo celebrity, you think that's how you exist. And
but that's right. You do a lot of celebrities, right?
Yeah, I do. I do.
Yeah.
And you know, but I have to say, the ones I do work with, they're really cool. They're very grounded.
Yeah.
They're, you know, they just happen to be in the film biz. But, you know, if you were to...
Well, one of our guys that sponsors me is Wesley Snipes. He's one of my clients.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, we have a celebrity business that even supports us at BBS Radio.
Wow, that's
so
great.
So just open up a little bit and let everybody know what's going on. Don't be shy about it. Go ahead.
Yeah, well, I mean, one person I work with is Nick Cage. And
I like. What's he like, anyway?
He's a great guy.
Cool guy?
He's a very spiritual guy.
Yeah.
He's very much into meditation, very mellow, very low-key, and has that real sublime sense of humor, so he's very funny.
Yeah,
and just really, really a sweet man, and we have great conversations, and we have a lot of other interests. We both love old cars, so we're always talking about old cars, and so it's really neat. But you learn that, at least I've found in my practice, I have like attracts like, you know, it's
exactly
a certain amount of physics behind this, where you know, many of the people I get, you know, they very easily, and quite a few of my patients have actually become friends because we find we have so much in common.
Yeah.
And it's been kind of a lifelong journey. And getting to that reason, I was curious, I vaguely remember you were in aerospace because I was a quality control engineer at Hughes Helicopters.
Where?
At Hughes Helicopters.
Oh, yeah.
I worked on the Apache.
Oh, you worked on the Apache?
Yeah, during the prototype days.
That's
yeah.
A bad dog.
Yeah, it is.
You know, 6,000, what is it? 4,000 horsepower and 8 tons of airplane. I mean, that flies upside down. Because I'm
flies
a pilot.
Upside down, goes 70 miles per hour side to side.
It's, yeah, and then it goes 200 straight out.
Right.
And I've flown the Bell Jet Rangers and R-22 and R-44 Bensons.
Oh, really?
I'm
yeah.
I'm a licensed pilot for 20-some years.
Oh, great.
But go for it, you know.
Yeah, so it was one of those things where I realized I just wasn't cut out for the corporate world.
Yeah, I understand that feeling. That's what happened to Rockwell with me.
Yeah, and NASA. I was 25 or 26, and I had to take a medical leave of absence because I was so high stressed.
Yeah.
And at the same time, I was coaching football at a junior college, and I was always interested in health from, at that time, I really wasn't in alternative medicine at all. But I was a pretty decent athlete, and I was good at, getting guys well if they got injured. So I really
sport injuries, yeah. That's
yeah, I really wanted to go into orthopedic surgery.
Yeah.
So I took the practice MCATs. I passed that, so I was studying for the regular ones, and I separated my shoulder where I was coaching football because I wanted to prove a guy my size. I'm not real big.
Were you trying to be a fullback that day, or
well,
what?
Well, no, I was actually pretending I was coaching the offensive line that day, and I wanted to show how a guy my size could take out a bigger guy just through leverage. And which I did, but I proceeded to separate my shoulder, but I proved my point.
Yeah.
And the track coach was good friends with the Japanese national track team, and they had an acupuncturist in town. And he took me to this guy because I had separated my shoulder pretty badly. Had great results with that, and then probably 6 months later, I tore my pectoral doing heavy bench press and went back to the same guy, and he fixed that. So I thought, let me find out more about this acupuncture. And as I jokingly tell everybody, 4 years later, I was sitting for my state board exams and have never looked back at trying to go to med school.
Yeah, no, I got that.
So, you know, and it's been just a great way to learn more about the world, learn more about people, and just have an open line of thinking because I'm not really caught in any type of dogma in terms of how I diagnose or, I don't have the same rules like, let's say, a gastro might have or a neurologist has. Like if I think there's something in your gut that's going to cause some brain problems, I'm going to look in the gut. And I'm not going to be told that I can't do that because it doesn't make any sense from a Western perspective.
While we're right here, how do people reach you anyway?
They can reach me at my website, which is myherbguy.com, or they can call me at 310-399-4024. That's my office number. And my email is healthpoint@myway.com.
Good, because I want everybody, you know, to be able to get a hold of you. And we've got you posted up on our, website, and it'll stay there for a few more days.
So thanks.
So I like to talk about herbs and environmental stress. That's one area I like to talk about. Do you have certain herbs that you would use for, you know, our polluted environment?
Yeah, it really depends on what I see. If it's more heavy metals, then which of course, you know, from petroleum
based products, much everybody.
Yeah, that's, you know, lead, cadmium, aluminum, mercury. A lot of the sea vegetables work well for that. So we use a lot of laminaria, sargassum. Certain berries or fruit parts like forsythia, those are very good herbs for that. If it's more toxins, petroleum-based toxins, paint fumes, again formaldehyde, solvents, then there's certain herbs in the long yin category that are really, really good, which are like glenia, aspargi, ophiopogon. So those are so we kind of try and build about what we see. And because usually the metals and the toxins are so are really kind of excess. They're very young in nature, so they create a lot of internal heat. And so you've got to find a lot of ways to, one, chelate all that stuff out, nourish the yin, and then kind of balance the yang. So it's a lot of we get a lot of liver balancing herbs because the liver gets toxed out trying to process all this stuff.
You know, let me just halt you for a second. Could you give some? You know, people get really toxic livers,
mm-hmm.
Then they get into anger.
Right.
Could you explain that from an Arabic standpoint to my audience a little bit? Because you're probably better at it than I am.
Well, the notion is that when the liver gets congested, the emotion associated with that congested liver is anger. And from a Chinese perspective, the liver is supposed to be flexible enough to help bridge the gap between the internal environment of the body and the external environment of the body. When the processing of those toxins build up, the liver becomes really congested, and the emotion then says that with this congestion comes frustration, and after frustration comes the anger. And so what happens is that the element of anger, when like a person they say is green with envy, well, the green is also the color of the liver, which is an excess condition. So in this excess condition, what you're really looking at is the liver on overload. And if you had to translate that back from a Western concept, it really is a situation that once the liver gets congested, or the system gets on overload, you have to think of the lymphatic system, and the liver is a very large lymph organ. The lymphatic system is kind of like the immune system is like a floating nervous system. So when the body gets congested, it creates these inflammatory enzymes, and inflammatory white blood cells, mast cells in particular, which sets off an inflammatory cascade to the brainstem, and that makes the adrenals get on overload. So now the adrenals kick in, and so now the person gets in this really kind of antsy, agitated state. Something called the HPA axis gets on overload as well. So the person really gets in kind of this fight or flight mode, which starts to teeter on the adrenals getting pushed. But the liver is really a system of the body in excess and not having the capacity to release that. And that's why I have patients try and do some yoga or Tai Chi.
Hold it for a second. That was the most brilliant, fluid explanation of Ayurvedic medicine to American ears I've ever heard.
Really? Oh.
Yeah. Could you put that in your book, please?
Oh, yeah, sure.
And I want a quotation of that to put in the book I'm working on. I've got a book coming out. I'll call you later. I want to be what you just said. I want to put it in my book and give you credit for it.
Oh, absolutely. Sure.
That was brilliantly broken down.
Oh, thanks.
Yeah, even explained it to me in a few terms I didn't know. Go ahead. I'm sorry to interrupt.
Oh, no problem. Because what I try and do, and which is why I love the testing system I use, is that it allows me to kind of bridge that gap between kind of standard Western thinking of how the body functions and then allow that to work its way into the Eastern concept.
I can really feel that working through you. You're good at it.
Well, thanks. I mean, I've had some great, I have to be very honest, I've had some wonderful mentors, from an MD that kind of took me under his wing and just used to let me hang out at his clinic in South Central. So I got to see the worst of the worst health.
Oh, yeah, no kidding.
And then the person who was in charge of the clinic at our acupuncture college, he used to be the chief surgeon at Dalian Hospital. But when he came here from China, when you come from another country, you have to intern again.
Yeah, no kidding.
And here was a guy who was in his probably early 60s. He wasn't going to intern. He ran a hospital, for crying out loud.
Yeah.
So he just got his acupuncture license. But he had this class that was called East-West Medical Diagnostics. And it succinctly put me in touch with how to diagnose. Because Chinese medicine initially, coming from more of a Western background than I had, was, I just memorized everything and passed tests. I didn't get it. I didn't understand it.
Yeah, I love it.
And
it's so great to have a brain like that. Yeah, I understand.
Yeah, as I told you, I was, I'm an ex-football playing frat boy,
If you played football, what part did you play?
Well, when I first started, I played small college football. I started off as a rover back, kind of a weak side linebacker, strong safety type. And then I kept getting injured because everybody was twice my size.
Yeah,
and then my senior year, I played. I alternated at the wide receiver spot.
Wow, that's pretty good. So you can catch them, huh?
Yeah, I could catch them, but they knew I liked to hit, so I pretty much was in on running downs.
So
I could knock. I think I caught like three passes, for the rest of the time. But I got big hit of the week like 2 or 3 weeks in a row. So
that's too funny. In high school, I was a tackle because I was a little guy too, and I just kind of grab their legs and make them fall.
That's funny. Yeah. But, it was a real transition for me to, go from this.
Where in China did you come from, anyway?
In China?
Yeah.
No, I'm not from China.
Where are you from?
I'm born and raised out here. My dad's from Bangladesh.
Okay, Bangladesh. That's what I need some roots here.
Yeah, No, I'm probably my grandmother is black, Chinese, and American Indian.
Okay. Oh, wow.
And then my dad was from Bangladesh, so
okay,
you know,
got it.
I am the melting pot.
Yeah,
I
know.
But I was Tiger Woods.
Realize the DNA thread. We haven't talked Pleiadian science yet, but the DNA threading that you've got is incredible.
Well, you know, it's
you're gifted.
Yeah. It's very interesting because you almost find that when you just kind of let things happen, your body almost intuitively starts to take you in directions of
exactly
where your roots are, and you don't really even think about it.
No, I understand, because you try to think about it, you screw it up.
I know.
No.
Yeah,
you're
right.
I've done it many times.
Too
I understand.
Often.
I got a weird heritage like you, too.
Oh, do you?
Yeah, I do. But go ahead.
So it's, you know, it's interesting because, you know, you grow up, and everybody kind of has the image of what they think, what people should look like. And,
yeah,
you know, like my grandmother's maiden name was Chin, which is Chinese.
Right.
And she grew up in like the Ohio Valley and in this mixed race family that lived in the German neighborhood, and they all grew up speaking German.
Oh, cool. That's good.
Yeah. So, you know, it's like, okay. And then my they moved out here, and then my mom met my dad at USC. And
wow.
That's how they hooked up. And my dad, of course, that then I think it was East Pakistan, before it became Bangladesh.
Now, I want to change this. We'll get back on this track in a minute.
Oh, no problem.
What kind of hobbies and sports are you into? What do you do? Like, what's your personal life? You're such a neat person. I'd like to know a little bit.
Oh, sure. I work out a lot. I right now I do a particular type of martial arts called Krav Maga.
Now, where is that from?
It's from Israel.
Okay. It's a new one then.
Yeah, it's newer. It was developed by a man named Emi Lichtenstein from, he was originally from Czechoslovakia, a Czechoslovakian Jew, and when he went and Israel was developing the Jewish state, they needed to have a form of fighting system for their defense force because that everybody could use, you know. Because
yeah, without all the weird twists and stretches and everything.
Yeah, yeah. So it was developed because, in Israel, I think you're still Army Reserve up until the age of, like, 60. And so,
really?
Yeah.
I know you got to do 1 year mandatory, male, female.
Yeah, but then you're Army Reserve. For almost for the rest of your life. So they had
you
to have a system that,
go ahead.
That young and old men and women can use and easy to replicate and reproduce. And it's used a lot by the Mossad. So they're kind of a secret service. A lot of
I know where they are. Yeah, go ahead. Go ahead.
A lot of their special forces use it. So I started doing it probably.
By the way, the Mossad is one of the best secret, you know, they blow the CIA off in the bushes. And MI5, MI6. These Mossad people, you know, when the CIA or even the old days when the KGB was around, mm-hmm. you know, because I worked in intelligence for a while.
Right.
And they go to the Mossad. You better keep your connections up there, baby, because they got the answers.
Oh, yeah. No, I've heard some amazing stories. A lot of our guys work with different organizations for terrorist training, and I train with all these guys. So,
yeah, that's way cool.
You know, you hear all these things. So I do that. I lift weights. I swim. I have two boys. They're now 6 and 9. I got them surfing last summer, so I started surfing again.
Where are you surfing? Up in Malibu?
No, actually down in right around Santa Monica, down into Playa Ray. I mean, down into Hermosa Beach, Manhattan Beach.
Oh, down there. That's where I learned to surf. Yeah, that's really,
oh, really?
Cool. Long time ago, way before you were born. Surfboards were being invented when I started on them.
Oh, wow. Well, I'm 52, so, you know, I've been around for a little while.
Yeah.
But, yeah, so I started, you know, so I surf again, and actually I just got over, I just had my second hip replacement surgery 10 weeks ago.
Why did you have to have that?
Well, from all my years of running and lifting weights when I was younger, I used to run, you know, up 80 to 100 miles a week.
That's a lot.
Yeah, well, that was back when Albert Rosales, I was running marathons, running craze in the late 70s, early 80s, and everybody was in the mega mileage, so I was out there with them, and then I've always lifted weights, and then for 4 years I did bodybuilding contests. So I was lifting massive amounts of weights, and you know it was just too hard in the hip.
But what were you? What was your best weight lift? You know,
My best bench was 363. My best squat was 45. My best deadlift, I got to, what did I do? I did 650 on deadlift.
Whoa! How much do you weigh now?
I'm 170. I'm 170.
You lifted 600 pounds over your head.
No, deadlift.
Oh, deadlift. Okay,
my best
off
clean
the ground.
My best clean was 305.
And you still had a backbone afterwards.
Oh, yeah, you know what, I'm very lucky. I've been very, very blessed. My hips get
you may
out, but my back...
You may need synovial fluids at some point, right? Go ahead, Don.
Yeah, no. You know, it's just one of those things, but now I do more more plyometrics and core training. So I'm never going to look heavy like that again. Too hard on the joints, and I'm hoping when my boys get older, they'll do more training like I do, and not so much all that crazy stuff we did when we were younger playing football and everything.
So. Yeah, what's your birth site?
Cancer.
Wow.
I'm actually right on the cusp of Leo and
cancer. Yeah, I can feel it.
So I tell people I never know whether to be moody or pompous or moody.
Yeah, that's really good. You're blessed with that. What are your two boys?
Let's see. My youngest one is Leo.
Okay. What day is his birthday?
August 16th.
Okay, and I'm the 10th.
And then my oldest one is his is January 21st. So his is
Capricorn.
Capricorn, yeah.
Yeah, that's a good, you got some, yeah, that's a real compliment between a Leo and a Capricorn. That's,
yeah, and my wife is Sagittarius. So.
Sagittarius are good girls.
Yeah, so we've got a nice blend of personalities running around the house.
Yeah.
There ain't a shy one in the bunch.
Yeah.
That's for sure.
So how are you doing on your book?
It's good. It's coming along.
Is this your first book, or have you written others?
No, this is my first book. First book. It actually took me a while to get going on. I've been trying to come up with a concept for who knows how long. But I'm into my first 20-plus pages. And
well, what's the book about? Explain to our audience what you're writing about.
It's about helping men understand their health so they can talk to women about their health. And the reason that came about was I have probably 90% of my clientele are women, and the biggest complaint I get from my women patients is that their husbands don't understand.
Don't care about their health.
Don't care about their health.
They're big babies.
Yeah. So
very good.
So this is and when I was looking around, the most of the books for men is to, how to have the perfect six pack, or how to last longer in bed, or how to turn back the clock.
Right.
And in one section of the book I'm writing right now, it's about the clock. It ain't about turning it back. It's about keeping the clock ticking. So
exactly.
But men aren't taught to articulate things about their health. So if they can't talk about their health, how do they expect to talk to their wives or loved ones about and understand their health? So I'm trying to create a book that creates dialogue about
That's
men
brilliant.
And women's health. And part of it is we'll be so I have a lot in there about nature nurture and how that comes about, and then but also trying to bridge that into now using kind of more down the earth kind of dude type language about, well, this is how you have to look at your health, and now this is how you can take that and talk to her about it, and just to help men understand that not talking about their health doesn't mean that they're well. And when you're talking about an aerospace, when I was 22 when I first started working there, and my first 6 months I was in aerospace, I went to 7 funerals.
Yeah, I can relate to that.
Yeah, and the thing I heard at each one of these funerals was, Bob was never sick a day in his life. But, Bob smoked. As soon as they got off shift, they were drinking at the pub.
Yeah.
They ate off the Roach Coach. And, and the thing I realized was, now that I'm in medicine, was that Bob didn't know he was sick. Bob was so flippin' toxic that he had no idea until finally the stuff blew up on him.
Yeah, exactly.
And so when you read the stats, the average male goes to the doctor like once every 4 years. And typically when they do go to a doctor, it's like when they come to me, the wheel's already fallen off the wagon.
Yeah, exactly.
Why don't you come to me when the wheels get a little loose?
Yeah, exactly. And you don't hurt. You're not going to stick it with a needle.
Yeah.
You're not going to give them a bad blood pressure reading,
And most of the time, probably, 90, 95% of my patients, I never even put a needle in them. I do mostly diagnostics, and I give them herbs. But the funny thing that's really interesting, though, is when I put a needle in a woman patient, she's like, oh, this is so cool. And most of the people who pass out on me and get a cold sweat are the guys.
Is that right?
Yeah, the tougher, the more macho they are, the faster they drop like a bad habit.
Yeah, I love it. You know what? God bless you if you can go into that market. You're talking redneck energy here.
Oh, yeah, big guy.
Yeah, and boy, I'll tell you what, you got some powerful kundalini up your butt to make this happen. You really do. I think you're going to do great. I'd love to promote you and your book when you get it going.
Oh, thanks. Yeah, I will take you up on that. Yeah, I'm having some really good success. As with anything, with writing, you hit a couple of sticking points, and I research a few things. I get back and I bang out a bunch, and then I go back and work. But it's been good. I was really looking for a topic that really grabbed me, and I've been trying to write a book for probably the last 10 years.
Yeah.
And I've probably gotten started I don't know how many times, and then I finally hit on this. And it was, how there's always an opportunity in everything. It was really came about when I was home.
Let me stop you right there, okay?
Yeah.
This is from my aspect, because I think you might get some wisdom from my ignorance, but this is, I wrote several books. What the first one that I wrote was called Death of Ignorance.
Uh-huh.
And I wrote it in 79. I borrowed money to get it published, and it was from my heart, and it was supposed to do 5,000 copies, so I went to pick it up, and I found the print shop was closed, and I went inside, there was a Catholic priest collating 444 copies of my book that I had paid for through this print shop, who had run away because they had a drug habit that I didn't know about it.
Wow.
And one of the, I delivered one of those to Bernie Kornfeld, who was breaking up with Victoria Principal.
Mm-hmm.
One of those books went to Queen Elizabeth, the Queen Mother that recently died.
Wow.
Those 444 books went all over the world and to the most famous places, and the money came back, but it wasn't about that.
Right.
Gregory, in 81, held it up in the New York Coliseum in front of 6,000 people and says, you got to have one of these.
Oh, fast.
So the other thing I want to get across to you is that in my experience of writing, especially when you're doing your first book, you know, Death of Ignorance, I took it up to Oregon at one point, and my guru of gurus was Richard Bach, because he wrote Jonathan Livingston Seagull.
Seagull, sure.
So I ended up hanging out with him up there because of one of my friends, and he had a Death of Ignorance, and I said, and I had the Illusion, you know, the latest one he did after the other one.
Right, right, right.
Where he flies the airplane.
Right.
And I said to him, I said, Richard Boxer, you're my ultimate authority on writing. Would you please sign this book? You know, and he said, no. And he stuck that Death of Ignorance book in front of me, and he said, you sign my book that you wrote first, and I'll sign that.
Oh, fabulous.
I signed it, and he signed it, and I said, does this make me an author? And he says, go figure that out for yourself. So I think you get the mantra, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
And the other thing is I'm working on a book now called Inside Track, and it's way overdue, and books are always overdue.
Right.
But here's what happens to me. When I'm writing a book and I'm working on it, I get stuck. I get all excited about it, do the foundational work, and then I lose the complete force. This is me.
Mm-hmm.
Then I'll out of guilt, because I know Spirit wants me to do this, I'll go on the internet and do my research here and there, and I'll have a big compilation of research.
Right.
And then pretty soon, the paper's piling up, but the book ain't getting written.
Right.
So what happens is, all of a sudden, it takes over. You can't think about going surfing or playing music or even almost doing a radio show. It's like, write the book.
Right.
As soon as you surrender to that, then suddenly, boom, this is how to present. You know, this is the last couple of weeks I've got how to get it, because I want this to go to Middle America like you're doing. I'm not used to doing this.
Right.
That's where we got to go.
Exactly.
So that's what's happening to me, and I got a feeling that might be happening to you right now.
Yeah, no, I'm glad to hear that, because that's really what has happened with me. I start tearing through a bunch of stuff, and then I get stuck, and so it's like, okay, let me do some research.
Just drop it. Just drop it, because this is what I do. Now, I'm sorry to say to you drop it, but I would drop it. It's a hard one to do.
Mm-hmm.
Stop right where you are. Throw it in the corner. Keep it where you're in a disciplined file, because you'll refer it later.
Right.
Just let whatever comes along next.
Right.
Because it's not you. At least it's not me. You
right.
know? I used to think it was me. Forget me. You know. I read my own book to remember what I said. You know?
Right. Right.
You're going to be doing that too.
Yeah. 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 No, that's great advice, because it really is one of the things that pretty much kept me from writing earlier. It was just the fact that I kept getting my brain in the way, you know.
Yeah, that's what we do. The mind, remember the Tibetans say that the mind is the slayer of the real.
Right.
Energy follows thought.
Right.
Yeah.
So, yeah, so so it's been fun. I mean, I've probably the most of anything I've attempted to write, and I'm really excited about the topic. But like I said, I do get stuck periodically. But it's good, because then when I do get stuck, I do get a little research. And it's kind of like what you just said. I'll start to see my research notes pile up. It's like, okay, now it's time to write. And then
and another thing, too, Uzi, is that think about your audience, man. You've got, like, in comparison to them, you got PhDs stacked on the wall.
Mm-hmm.
And they're just in, like, kindergarten.
Right.
That's the hard one. That's where you got to really humble it and simplify it. I mean, there's so many facts that I see when I want to get this out, you know?
Right.
But the humble mind can't get that. You just got to get the basic message and just get it up on the level of intellect that you want. So if you want to throw facts and build up the chapters with some facts, that gets the intellectual.
Right. And
depends on your market. This is how I do it. Yeah.
Right. And I actually run into that every day in my office, because I think what happens with a lot of my patients, they get so inundated with the $10 words about their health that, you know, I just break it down and say, look, you know, you feel lousy for a reason as opposed to trying to use some big medical term.
Yeah.
And people appreciate that because you're talking to them at a level that respects the fact that they don't need to have the $10 words to explain what's wrong. They just want to know what's wrong. They just want to have potential resolution to the issue without having to, you know, climb through the whole thesaurus to figure out what the hell you just said, you know. So, it's for me, it's exciting because it's an opportunity to get, you know, a lot of what I've run into in the last 18, 19 years in my practice, A, off my chest, and B, you know, hopefully translate to people so they can see, hey, you know, I've got some options here. Because I think people also get stuck in terms of how they want to look at their health. I mean, we're so inundated with every ad on television about ask your doctor about, you know, this medication, ask your doctor about that medication. It's like, well, you know, maybe there's some things you can ask yourself about first.
Yeah.
And then try and translate that into your health as opposed to just getting the standard prescription that's for reflux or whatever.
Yeah, well, they put so many toxins in their body, they'll never get so bad, you know. But the drug industry has figured it out from the toxin level. They figured out how to, you know, slow this toxin responsive to the consciousness level, and they make a fortune on that.
Oh, yeah, sure.
And now they're doing programming up on the, you know, ELF level so that, you know, the higher frequencies of negativity can take them over, and they can just put them in these 600 jails they're putting
right,
up, you know.
Right, right.
You know about all that?
And, you know, and I think that's where people, when they come to me and they go, God, I just don't feel right, you know, and then you look at the meds that they're on, and you go, well, that's probably most of the reason why you don't feel right right there.
Yeah.
And I'm not one of those people that says throw the baby out with the bathwater. I mean, if you need antibiotic, you need it. But at the same time, I think people are on way too medication. My mom, who's 81, you know, she goes, when she went to her new doctor last year, you know, she pretty much takes care of everything with herbs and nutrition. And so the doctor says, well, what medications are you on? She goes, I'm not taking any. And he goes, well, you should be on medication. And she goes, why? He goes, well, you're 8 at the time, 80. She goes, you're 80. She goes, and?
Yeah, right.
That means, he goes, well, you should be on something. She goes, well, what should I be on? He goes, well, you know, well, you're not even on high blood pressure medication. She goes, do I have high blood pressure? She goes, well, no. So, you know,
you wanted her on peyote.
Yeah, you know, it's like, well, what do you want her on? You want her to smoke a spliff? I mean, what's up here? So, you know, so it was very, very funny. And she's like, it was almost like a who's on first thing.
Yeah.
And, you know, well, you should be on medication. Why? Well, I don't know why, but you should be on medication because people your age are on medication. And she's like, well, I don't need to be on medication. He goes, but you should be on medication. And, I mean, you know, and she's one of those people that, you know, she gets a little reflux, and all she does is she takes a little hit of, like, noni juice, and she's fine.
Yeah, I love it.
You know, and, but the doc's like, you mean noni juice works for you? She's like, yeah, you know, I don't have to take anything. But, you know, but we get so locked into, like we were saying earlier, you know, everybody's in the trappings of
I want to interrupt. Speaking of juice, my girlfriend is a naturopath.
Oh, fabulous.
Yeah, and she's got me on the goji juice.
Uh-huh.
So could you, she's really like, if I don't do the goji juice, I get killed, but it's really good stuff. Do you know much about that?
Well, it's lycium fruit.
Yeah.
And the lycium fruit is a heart and kidney tonic.
Yeah, I need that, yeah.
And so it really helps nourish from a yin perspective. It nourishes the yin a bit, which for us guys, it helps control the yang.
Yeah.
It has a wonderful source of antioxidants.
Right.
And in particular, it has a ton of lycopene in it. It's a red fruit.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, that's good, yeah.
So removes a lot of free radicals out of the body. So it's great. You know, for me, I use it in conjunction with the lycium fruit in other things. But
what is it? What do you use it in conjunction with?
Well, usually there's in particular, I use it with longan fruit and kurtagi, hawthornberry.
Okay.
And so lycy, longan, and kurtagi are really kind of great support herbs from a lot of my heart patients.
Yeah.
It helps with a healthy vascular system. So it's, but no, goji is a very, very good herb. And it's great seeing it out. I mean, I think it's interesting that so many people are doing some of these herbs to get it out in kind of an individual thing because I'm so used to making formulas.
Yeah.
So
could you tell everybody about some of the formulas you make and what they do?
As I was saying earlier, most of what I make are individualized formulas, but some I'll take or some.
Well, just give us a potpourri of, like, you know, heart, you know, weight, you know, anxiety, you know, basic idea.
Yeah, well, there's a, for let's say for sleep disorders or stress.
Yeah, sleep disorders is a big one. That's a big one.
But there's a great formula called bupurum and dragon bone.
Right.
The bupurum that's in there, it really helps bring the dragon bone. This is really kind of a bone that's been fossilized. They grind it down, and what you really are getting is the calcium and magnesium that's in the bone.
But the really high acidity is calcium-magnesium combo with the right ratio.
Right, and so that
which
helps.
Is very important, people out there. That, you know, to get your calcium-magnesium, you're taking it randomly, it doesn't matter. You got to have it in the ratio.
Right. Yeah. Which, kind of a quick side note, I know if a lot of you know this as well, is a lot of the research is showing that you should be taking a slightly higher ratio of magnesium to calcium.
Exactly.
That the high calcium isn't utilized very well. The magnesium higher rate is.
I got that. Yeah, it's true.
So there's that one. There is.
Do you make this?
Yeah, I can make. I make it for people. I'll actually take elements of it and do maybe customize it a bit for people.
Yeah, you do variation for their intensity of their assimilation, right?
Right. Because like someone might have some kidney deficiency, so I may take a Romania formula and take some of the herbs out of that.
How do you diagnose them anyway?
Well, again, with this muscle testing technique.
Okay, I got
I'll
it.
Do,
oh, yeah, that was explain that once again.
Well, I use this O-ring test, and so I will stress out particular points on the meridian system to see which meridian. Well, actually, first, let me back up a little bit. What I'll first do is I'll do tongue and pulse. I'll check the pulses, I'll look at the tongue, and that'll tell me, along with what they've said to me in terms of intake, what systems are out of balance in their body. And then from there, I'll start by going, let's say the lung meridian shows that it's weak or low. The lung pulse shows that it's low. I'll go to the lung meridian, and I'll start doing my O-ring test to determine, is there actually anything brewing in the lungs that's making a person sick? Now, living in L.A., that ain't rocket science because, you know, there's enough junk in the air to make their lungs bad. So now I got to figure out what that might be. Is it a toxin? Is it pollen? Is it an infection? As I find those things, I'll start to build a formula from that. It can come from a classic formula, or I will take elements of that classic formula and adjust it, or I'll just build them a formula from scratch that's just specific to their needs. And then I treat a lot of women with hormone problems, so I'll check particular points that are associated to that match up to like the ovaries or the pituitary. I'll look and see, is there something blocking the communication between the ovary and pituitaries? Is there something that's reducing how well the progesterone and estrogen is working? And then we'll build a formula that might be more appropriate with something like Dongguei or Dioscorea or, you know, red peony, fructus corneum, which are really good for inducing the feedback loop that allows the body to make the precursors that helps them make the hormones. So, so it really just depends. You know, a lot of times women have so many what they call false hormones in their body, false estrogen. The xenoestrogen is the technical name. Which comes from pesticides and petroleum-based products. So I'll spend a lot of time trying to make their body understand that, help their body understand that this false estrogen is causing the bulk of the problems. We need to get that out, which means getting the liver to work better, and then we give them herbs to help their body produce a little bit more progesterone. And what's great about these herbs is that they're very, very safe. So even if someone were to have a predisposition to breast cancer, it isn't necessarily going to drive the estrogen esters to make a tumor grow. In fact, it has the opposite effect in that it helps the body's natural killer cells and something called tumor necrosis factor work better to help protect the connective tissue.
Yeah, and I have a question right there. When you get up to the threshold of where you're using the herbal remedy versus a negative result,
mm-hmm.
I always, I study cancer. I work with a lot of cancer specialists over the years, and my basic understanding has been that if you keep your pH, way up on the alkaline level,
mm-hmm.
then the cancer cells really don't have a chance in hell to manifest anywhere.
Right, exactly.
Yeah,
exactly.
So I would imagine that you don't know. And my question now is, with that said, is that are some of these herbs prone to drive your body into the, into the high pH alkaline level?
Right, great point. Yeah, one of
that's something you should bring out, because a lot of people don't know that. I think that's a big question. Everybody thinks about herbs. This is just me. But everybody thinks about herbs, and you're doing a great, brilliant dissertation here, but they think about herbs, but on the back of their head, a lot of them are learning now, what if I'm taking all these herbs, because they think of herbs in yin.
Right.
So all of a sudden, I'm growing this great yin, but my body's already acid. Do these herbs actually bring me to the yang or to the alkaline level? So that's my question.
Yeah, they do. And basically, because as a plant source, you can almost look at how vegetables and fruit have a tendency to make us more alkaline anyway.
Yeah.
So herbs are definitely in this alkalining category. And another point, kind of a tangent to what you're saying, is a lot of times with that, people are fearful of taking herbs because of all the so-called bad press that...
Exactly,
which is ridiculous, because when you realize that 500,000, I mean, the third leading cause of death in the United States is from Western medications. You know, not from herbs. The people that they talk about have died from herbs are the same 30 people that supposedly died from ephedra, and these people have pre-existing conditions when they used it. Ephedra has been used safely for the last 4,000 years.
Exactly.
As very, very safely for multiple issues. But the thing that people don't realize is that Western meds can stay in your system up to 6 months, the med half-life.
Yeah.
Herbs are out of your system in 3 days.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, as a food base, as a plant-based ingredient, it's in and out of your system in 3 days. So even if you were having a so-called reaction to the herbs, you stop the herbs for 3 days, you're done. You're good. You're
yeah.
good to go. But they make it sound like, oh, these herbs are bad. Like even when they took comfrey off the market because it was causing hepatitis, comfrey, if used the correct way, is great for digestion. Yeah, if you overuse it, it might create some liver toxicity. But
again, I don't think it creates hepatitis, do you?
No, I don't think so. I think
that's stretching it.
In most of the cases when they were saying it was causing either hep or kidney disorders for people, I think have pre-existing conditions.
Let me explain something here. We all carry toxins in our body. We all have, at any point in time, enough toxins that if they were took off at once, we'd be dead. I mean, that's most people.
Right.
And when you get into hepatitis, you know, strains, I think everybody in America that's ever drank out of the water out of the faucet pretty much has a little hep going on in there.
Sure.
So if you get them on the right herb, it might resonate what's already in there and create a healing crisis, and they might diagnose that.
Right.
Hepatitis A, B, or C. But, I mean... I don't think that the herbs do it. I think the herbs, and you might as well get rid of it now,
you know,
because then you have a clear karma in the next world, if that's where
you are. Well, you know, and that's an interesting point, and I'm sure you probably have run into the same thing. People are so used to being ameliorated from when they take something. I mean, if they have a headache, they take an aspirin,
yeah.
And even though the aspirin numbs the headache, they think that the headache has gone away.
Right.
Whereas when you take the correct homeopathic or the correct herb, a lot of times your symptoms get worse before they get better.
Exactly.
And people don't want to go through that. I mean, they want to go quietly in the night and think that, it's like, no. you have to experience something. And one of the things we're going to do is we're going to entice your immune system to go after the reason why you're sick, which means you're going to have a healing crisis. And I always tell my patients that it's a good thing when that happens because we know the herbs are working.
Yeah.
And they think, I'm having an allergic reaction. I go, well, is your throat closing? No. Are you getting puffiness around the eyes? No. Are you having hives? No. Then it's not an allergic reaction. You know, you're having a healing reaction, and it's a positive thing. But people don't like that. They want to, like when they have the cough, and they want to take the steroid that drives the cough back into the system and leads to other problems, as opposed to say, well, no, why don't I take a very good antibacterial, antiviral herb, or a homeopathic or Ayurvedic med, and entice the body to find its source of ailment so it can get rid of it. And people want to take, we've been so programmed to expect that just because you can mask a symptom,
yeah.
It makes it better. Real quick note here, when they come to my office, they'll go, do you have any, it's kind of my running joke, is do you have any digestive problems? No, I don't have any digestive problems. I do an intake with them. I see they're on any meds, and all of a sudden I see that they're on Prevacid. I said, well, you're on Prevacid, so that means you have a heartburn issue. He goes, no, I take the Prevacid, I don't have heartburn, so I don't have a digestive problem. No, you have a digestive problem, so that's why you take the Prevacid. No, I take the Prevacid, it makes my digestive, it's like they don't get it, that all you're doing is masking the problem. You're not getting at the root cause of it.
Well, it's just like... the death of this girl last week,
mm-hmm.
in all the news. you know, when she was on So Many Downers, you know, and I know because I've worked with psychologists, psychiatrists, and when they start taking these, you know, meds for, you know, bringing them down, it's like Elvis, up, down, up, down.
Right.
It eats their stomachs out.
Sure.
Yeah. And Nicole, you know, when she died, it was no mystery because her, she probably bled to death internally in her stomach.
Right.
And that's pretty much what happens with people that do that stuff. And in today's time, when we're reaching this high consciousness plane, and it's time to like change frequency. We got to get these people out of this. You know, I'm frozen in this life to moving on. That's why this book is going to be so important. I hope you bring this across, like this conversation that you had about people and this, what you said and this joke. You've got to put that in your book.
Yeah, actually, it's how I kind of open the book.
Oh, good. That's very good.
You know, because it's,
yeah.
You know, it really amazes me how many people are, and even though I'm kind of bagging on men a little bit, I mean, there are plenty of women out there that have kind of taken on this male persona.
Yeah.
You know, just because they want to be the gritty business person, and so they feel like you have to be a dude in order to do that. And it's like, you know, you're going to miss out on some of the nurturing aspects of being a woman by trying to be a man.
Exactly.
And in that, you're going to, you know, because now the number one cause of death among women is a heart attack, and now it's happening earlier and earlier. Whereas
how what's the statistic gotten down to on the younger age?
Now it's, I think women are now having heart attacks in their 60s now, early 60s.
Okay.
Which is before it was like late 60s, early 70s.
Okay.
And so it's moving, whereas men on average have it somewhere around their 50s.
Yeah, exactly.
So, you know, now they're noticing that women are dying from the same lifestyle ailments that men have been dying from for the last, since they started recording this stuff. So, you know, it's pretty frightening that some of the top 10 things that have routinely killed men are now starting to do the same thing to women. So heart disease, lung disease, kidney disorders, diabetes, you know, these are all starting to show almost as prevalent in women, even though, having said that, you know, women have a tendency to live about 5 years longer than men.
Right.
But so, you know, then I guess the argument there is who truly is the weaker sex. But
there you go.
You know, but it's frightening because in our society, in this fast-paced society, which, again, kind of another side note, I don't know if you know this or your listeners know this, but at this point in time in history, we have the most labor-saving devices that at any time of our lives,
yeah,
and we have
that.
The least amount of free time.
Right.
So when do you take the time to take care of yourself?
Exactly. Exactly. I said that. I often talk to my audiences, not just in the radio, but in the lectures and that. I ask them, you know, in a 24-hour time period, how many of you take 20 minutes? Just sit down for 20 minutes and figure out what's going on. Usually one hand.
Right.
If you got 500 people.
Mm-hmm.
When
wow.
you get down to 10 minutes, maybe get 4 or 5,
mm-hmm.
and nobody else takes any time.
Right, yeah. Right.
They wake up confused and go to bed that way.
Right.
You know what I mean?
And then,
my last question is, what do you think of these flu viruses that are going around, and what are some, you know, what recommendations about everybody that's getting the flu right now?
Well, you know, one of the favorite things I have people pick up and keep on hand is that elderberry extract.
Yeah.
I think that's an early onset. I think that's a great thing to have around the house. If you're a little late, it's also good to take because it's great for the sore throats and the cough. I like the Zicam swab. I think that's really helpful. You know, for kids, there's a great product called Herbs for Kids,
right.
Which is really, really good. I'm also real, you know, oxalic oxinum, the homeopathic for early stages. The thing that people need to remember, too, is that, you know, it's important to make sure you wash your hands. If you have a neti pot or some sort of nasal irrigator, it's important to do those things. Because that way you can slough off all the viral proteins that get kind of trapped in your sinuses. You know, vitamin C, I think, is also very important. I don't know if you have to megadose the Linus Pauling amount, but, I mean, I think if you're doing, you know, 2,000 to 4,000 milligrams a day during flu season, that's a good thing to do. Zand has a great product that's an Echinacea and Golden Seal blend. What I usually tell my patients to do is, even if you're not sick, what you can do is 2 weeks on of the it's called Ensure Herbal, 2 capsules, 2 to 4 times a day.
Yeah, I use those. Those are really good.
Yeah, and then take a week off, and the week that you're off, you take something like astragalus, which bumps up the immune system, and then you go back 2 weeks. So you just rotate that back and forth, and what that does is you keep enough antiviral, antibacterial elements going on in your body, and the astragalus really imbues the white blood cells to work more effectively for you. So that's kind of good preventative maintenance. If you're really late and you start having a nasty cough, Nature Aid has a very good natural cough remedy, and so does B&T, has a great homeopathic cough syrup. That's really, really good. Ear problems with adults and kids, I tell them to pick up mullein oil with garlic. A couple of drops in the ear is really good for that. Some sort of essential oil infusions are really good. So using things, some blends of either lavender and eucalyptus or eucalyptus and basil or basil and rosemary, those are all really good. You can steam with that. You can make infusions and spray around the house. So those are great ways to have some things on hand, some tools on hand.
So rosemary is good to put in like a boiling water solution and inhale it?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It really breaks up the mucus.
Congestion, yeah.
Yeah.
That's
yeah.
a good one. I should, yeah, because I always had sinus problems as a kid.
Right.
And I haven't been sick in a year and a half with anything, and then I got this little flu that came through and only got me down for a couple of days, and I'm back again. But it was interesting that something actually hit me. You know,
right.
I felt like a consciousness-raising flu, but... You know, we all have toxins, and I got it, and my girlfriend got it, and we got it at the same time, got it over at the same time.
Yeah, and you know, it's all lock and key. I mean, it's
yeah.
the luck of the draw sometimes. I mean, you can do everything perfect and still get sick. And of course, when people, when they get sick, they get panicked. And I always tell people, it's not a bad thing if you get sick. That at least lets you know your immune system's working.
Yeah, exactly.
The problem is if you're getting sick all the time. Now,
yeah, that's
issues.
The problem.
But if you're getting sick once every, you know, I mean, basically the average person without kids will get sick between 0 to 3 times a year.
Wow.
If you have kids, the average parent and kids will get sick 4 to 6 times a year. Teachers will do about the same as parents because they're like surrogate parents. But having said that, if you're getting sick like every couple of weeks and it's turning into a bronchitis or sinus infection, then not only do you have to get rid of the pathogenic material, but you have to take a look and see, well, what are you doing in your life that's suppressing your immune system? And, you know, more often than not, it's stress. At the neuropsych department at UCLA, they found that stress can suppress white blood cell activity by 60%.
That's amazing. Stress, white blood cell by 60%.
Right. And in particular, one of the main ones...
That's 50% of your immune system.
Right. And,
wow.
and one in particular suppresses is your natural killer cells, which are the guys that kill viruses.
So. Yeah, exactly. I understand that. We're down to the last minute, so I need your phone number out there and how to get a hold of you.
Sure. I can be reached at area code 310-399-4024, or you can email me at healthpoint@myway.com, and you can take a view at what I do on myherbguide.com. That's my website.
All right, thanks. You know, tonight you heard from Majid Ali. I think in my history of shows, you know, he's definitely my teacher right now. Young guy, but, you know, that's what these herbalists, they never get old. So anyhow, we didn't do the crazy hot rod to hell tonight because we just sort of ran out of time too fast. So anyhow, Majid, I want to call you and talk to you personally.
Okay.
And, yeah, we always have a little skit at the end where I criticize some government sanction or some company or something. We just skipped it tonight.
Okay.
So anyhow, thanks for being on the air, and I look forward to talking to you soon. And you want to come back on?
Oh, absolutely. Anytime. I'll
okay, we'll be bringing you back.
Thank you.
All right, thank you. This is
All right.
it from Dr. Fred Bell's Health, Science, and Energy Show. Thank you down there in Florida for listening to me so late at night. And until next time, next Friday, aloha.
I love you.